This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, we make a difference. Tonight, I have a couple of lovely guests with us from Afghans for Peace. Suraya Sahad, who was born in Afghanistan under the Soviet occupation, and she fled the country with her family, fleeing from the war that killed over 2 million Afghans. She was raised and grew up in Toronto, Canada. Following the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, she has been determined to speak out against all forms of injustice in her home country and people. She's an outspoken activist and member of Afghans for Peace and the Toronto Coalition to Stop War. We also will be speaking tonight to Laila Masri, who was born in Kabul, Afghanistan, and currently resides in Toronto, Canada. At the age of 5, along with her family, she was displaced from her native land due to the Cold War. She is currently earning her master's in education with a research focus on forms of resistance reclaiming democracy and education in occupied Canada. Her activism includes anti-imperial, anti-racist work advocating for struggles against neocolonialism in Afghanistan, Palestine, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Wonderful. Hello, ladies. How are you this evening?
Hello.
Hello. Good. Thank you.
We had a little bit of music there, a little music interlude, never hurt anybody. You know, there are a lot of things that are happening, and it's interesting when you call for a war, you know, the firm stance against war and occupation and the demand of the Afghan people to allow their right for self-determination, which has been the same struggle of the Palestinian people, my people. I am Palestinian by birth and came to this country during the unfettered immigration process of the Israeli Jews that came in. And so I know that path that you follow. And as an activist myself, it's a hard life, and I will wish you young ladies good luck, and I hope that you don't have to wait 65 years, although it's been a long time. As of last year, Suraya, if I'm not mistaken, the American occupation of Afghanistan has actually exceeded the Soviet occupation. Am I correct?
Yes, it has. Unfortunately, yeah.
Active in war. And, you know, with all of the events that I really have to talk to you guys about, what are the Afghan community here and abroad in Afghanistan, what are they saying about this issue of Osama bin Laden being found in Pakistan and not in Afghanistan?
Well, a lot of confusion, really, and just mixed emotions. I can't really speak for the Afghans in Afghanistan, but at least here in Toronto, there's just, from the people, the Afghan Canadians that we've been speaking with, it's just a lot of confusion, and not really sure what to think. I mean, a lot of people are really just amused, thinking, you know, after 10 years, they finally find him. Now, after it's been made clear that he's not even relevant to the Afghanistan war anymore, and suddenly they find him and they're celebrating his death and they're making it look like a victory, and some people even going as far as saying that his death justifies the war. And but for the Afghan people themselves, at least from speaking on behalf of myself, I'm just really confused. I don't know what to think. Like I said, he's not even relevant to the war anymore. It's been repackaged so many times. It's been going after insurgents, fighting terrorism, women's rights, democracy, training the Afghan army. So yeah, and also this.
Go ahead.
A lot of Afghans didn't believe he was in Afghanistan. Anyways, a lot of people kind of always assumed he was hiding somewhere in Pakistan. So that part didn't really come as a surprise.
Yeah, I have to admit that I wasn't really very surprised at all. It was kind of hard for a man that it was used to all the luxuries of life to spend these past 10 years in a cave somewhere.
Can I add on?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Layla.
Sorry, I just wanted to add on. Like we were saying about the confusion, I think there's a lot of splitting about the different camps of who believes what. Some people will believe that the official story is real without questioning it, and some people are questioning it. And then there are another group is those who are not just questioning it, but are more confident that this is just another attempt to socially engineer viewers to yet again forget about what this war has done, but support another American victory, supposedly a victory. So there's a lot of splitting about what this really means. Personally, I totally question and challenge it. A Pakistani that was living in the neighborhood where supposedly Osama bin Laden was said that this can't be true. He can't believe it. He actually owned a home right beside that mansion, and he never noticed that family to be there. And that area is supposed to be a very secure zone. And also that mansion is very close to the largest military academy in Pakistan. And everybody that lives in that area supposedly is supposed to have a pass through a gate or something. It's a private area. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's a lot of suspicion about what does this really mean, especially since some Afghans also believed he died years ago when he had kidney problems. And then there's other rumors that Benazir Bhutto, who was assassinated days later after she admitted claimed that he was murdered. So
yes, David Frost show in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, so there's a lot of unanswered questions. And I think it's rightful for people to challenge and question it rather than being fearful by this label of this is just another conspiracy theory.
My concern, and perhaps you young ladies can talk to us about this. My concern is that, as I stated when we first started the program, is that currently the United States occupation of Afghanistan has exceeded the Soviet occupation. This started far before, long before Osama bin Laden became the enemy of the world. Mm-hmm. Long before 9/11, long before any of the events of that most people believe were the causes of the war, we went in to find Osama bin Laden. The one thing that I think people forget is that we were already in. We had been in for years, and so this going in was an illusion right from the very beginning. We were already in Afghanistan. Our war and our occupation, our guise for getting the Soviets out, and then what? Engaging in our own war? Because that is where Osama told us that he was going to be going. It just seems like a very fragile myth to try to continue to ride wings on. What do you get?
Exactly. I totally agree. I think it's social engineering, because the fact that one person is murdered does not mean the world is a more safer place for anyone, because supposedly right now they want to replace Osama with another leader of Al-Qaeda, and others are saying, then what about Mullah Omar? Where is he, the leader of the Taliban? And what about Gulbuddin Hikmatyar? What about him? If we're going after terrorists, what about those people? Is it just this one 60-year-old that is the threat for the whole global population? It's just us, to me, social engineering people's fear yet again to support anything that's being fed to them.
Yeah, exactly. And all this, also the warlords that are running the that are in the Afghan, the NATO-backed Afghan government now. But yeah, as for Osama bin Laden hiding in Afghanistan, there was this one interview with Dick Cheney where he was talking about bin Laden's hideout in the cave and just the way he described it. I mean, those of us who watch it, we just burst out laughing because he was talking about how he's got, like, how basically he's got, like, how modern it is and how he's got, like a kitchen and bedrooms and all this and all, to basically just survive in Afghanistan in a cave and how they were able to plan the 9/11 attacks. It just was really hard to kind of buy, at least from Dick Cheney. So,
but yeah, we can't buy if this actually did happen, because supposedly his body is now floating in some sea around Pakistan. So
now I know, Suraya, you are Muslim. And Leila, I'm not sure if you are or not.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, I've never, and I know I talked about this earlier today, I've never heard of a Muslim dying on land and being carried out to sea to be buried as being part of the Muslim, culture. Have you guys ever heard of something like that happening?
No, I have not.
Yeah. And we have to ask, why did they care so much to practice Islamic custom for someone who
was so hated?
They really have no, they would not care for him to have a dignified death. They aired Saddam Hussein on TV when he was hung. They aired photos of Saddam Hussein's sons when they were murdered. So suddenly now they care about giving him a dignified death. Without anyone's even awareness of why would you just throw his body in there as a Islamic burial. There's just this whole myth is
well,
is
I know when I heard the news myself, I had no problems seeing that Osama bin Laden may have been at one time caught and killed. I was not surprised that he was in Pakistan. I was not surprised that he was living in a luxurious lifestyle. But when they said they buried him at sea within hours after his death as part of the Islamic custom, that's just a load of hogwash.
Exactly
what that is.
And
we just blew the man's head off. I hardly think that we really cared one way or the other about protecting his rights in the afterlife.
And supposedly he was living there. And supposedly he was living at that mansion since 2006. So you think that he would hide. You know, he's known as Osama bin Laden, but he wasn't really hiding because he was living right near a military academy. So it's just hard for me to believe that the masses would not question this. But that's just how powerful the mainstream media has.
If they have been watching Osama bin Laden for over a year now, that is the story from the Pentagon and the White House, is that they've been working with this mission for over 1 year now. If this case is true, then I'm sure they must know who knew and who didn't know that Osama bin Laden there, just by the people that went in and out. Now, they say they followed couriers, and that's what led them to this, but I don't believe that for a second. And I don't think any of the news analysts, I don't think any of the people in government believe this. There's questions that are popping up and arising. But it's neither here nor there. That's the official story. Now we either leave it to the soothsayers or to the conspiracy theorists. And who's to say that everyone doesn't have a little bit of rightness going on? You know, you talk about Islamophobia and racism. What do you experience being of Afghan heritage? What kind of issues have arisen since Afghanistan has been deemed and dubbed this heinous country that supported terrorism? What type of things do you guys in Canada experience? Suraya, do you have anything for that?
Yeah, I went through some. I was treated fairly poorly when I was 15 when 9/11 happened when they invaded Afghanistan. And I was part of, you know, that sparked some interest in my own religion, Islam. So I joined the Muslim Student Association, and we were, it's interesting because we had an internet forum and we were discussing Islamic issues, and the president of the MSA, he posted a quote from the Quran saying and it was his own personal opinion, but he posted a quote to back up his own claim, thinking, oh, I don't think non-Muslims will go to heaven. And then myself and the supervising teacher said, oh, well, we actually do, we believe they will go to heaven. Somehow the school staff got a hold of the internet forum, which we were allowed to have, and they shut down our MSA. They took out the president of the MSA out of school for at least a month, and they had started harassing some of our members throughout the school year, where they wanted to check our lockers. They kept calling us down to the office, and so it wasn't really easy for us because back then I was also against the Afghanistan war, and I had been verbal about it as well, and I think, at least in my school, when I was in high school, I mean, it did get noticed. And back then, I noticed that people were very suspicious of anyone who was from that part of the world in Afghanistan and who did have a Muslim background. So I experienced Islamophobia.
Do you think that because the information that we received here in this country was that the Afghanis were housing and protecting Osama bin Laden, do you think that was directly responsible for some of the racism that you experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm some of my own classmates, when we were discussing the issue, they said, oh, why don't we just bomb Afghanistan off the face of this planet and solve our problems right there? And I'm thinking, how can the murder of an entire nation, I mean, the murder of millions of people and destroying an entire nation solve terrorism in the world? I mean, this, it was so, there was just so much hate and ignorance, you know? And I do think it came from the media thinking, you know, oh, well, the Afghans were protecting Osama bin Laden. And a lot of people couldn't even differentiate between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Today, people still can't differentiate between the two. And even now, the media is saying they're afraid of some sort of backlash from the Muslim community because of bin Laden's death. And it's offensive. It's as if he represents us to begin with, and he doesn't. So,
well,
yeah,
unfortunately, unfortunately, it may very well happen. I mean, there are extremists in every culture, every religion. I mean, we have had a slew of bombers in the United States. Yeah. The interesting thing is we never thought about asking them which religion they were. And I find that to be interesting. Laila Masri, you have experienced some issues with racism and Islamophobia?
Yes, I actually wrote a research paper recently for my global migration class. It was called Being an Afghan Muslim in Toronto, Victimization via Mental Colonization. It was on a recent report, a recent study based in Toronto called Cultural Identity and Experience of Prejudice and Discrimination of Afghan and Iranian Immigrant Youth. And the Afghan youth, most of them that were studied were university students, first generation young Afghans, who were saying that mostly it was the media who was misinforming their classmates, their peers, their coworkers about what Afghanistan was, what Islam was, and who Osama bin Laden is. Most of them, when they thought of Afghans or Afghanistan, they thought of Osama bin Laden. So right away, they didn't even give the individual a chance to be recognized as a human being with uniqueness, but they just saw a terrorist. And so because of that, a lot of them felt shame. A lot of them internalized inferiority about themselves. Most of them hid the fact that they were Afghan, even from their own public school teachers, because they were also getting their information from the mainstream media, who was totally misinforming, distorting the image of the Afghan people. Most of them did not even know that Osama bin Laden is not even an Afghan. Most of them think that the biggest terrorist in the world is Afghan people. And there's not even a stable Afghan army. We've been in a war-torn country for almost three, four decades now. And so a lot of them were saying that they're frustrated by the media, the lack of educated teachers about defending or protecting them from this racism, this ignorance. But most of them, by the end of their school experience, they became more resilient. And well, so the ones that were studied, that they became more proud of their cultural identity because that experience made them want to know more about Islam, wanted to know more about Afghanistan. Mostly all the Afghans that were studied constantly talked about experience of discrimination and prejudice in Toronto.
Well, you know, I have found that to be very true in the Palestinian area as well. That and oftentimes what happens is we have this fight or flight reaction when we're being mm-hmm. attacked, whether it's a physical attack or an attack of prejudice or racism. And what ends up happening is, and this is something that I'm seeing, that a lot of youth are going back into the fold, not just in Islam, but in Christianity. I happen to be a Christian Palestinian. And but I know that what's happening has affected our youth so that they have become very family oriented, very going back to their roots, back to their mm-hmm. religion, and using this as a form of defiance. You know, if you don't want me to be Muslim or Christian or Arab or whatever or Afghani, then I'm going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like tell somebody they can't do something and they'll want to. I find that to be very interesting. You know, I have a couple of questions and I'm going to ask them now. Usually I would have waited, but because we are on this topic, I don't want to lose the train of thought. Yuan from China asks, how do you know that they kill Osama? There's no body, there's no videos, and the government can say anything about the DNA test. And apart from that, there are people alike Osama. I guess maybe look alike Osama. That is Yuan's question, sort of. How do you know they killed Osama?
How do we know if it's true or not? What the
I believe that
what the White House is reporting. I think they want us to close the case. And also this is a major distraction from the facts of what America has done since 9/11. And it's really unfortunate because we continually are being thrown at with distractions because right now, just recently, I think it was a couple of days ago. Muammar Gaddafi, his sixth son and two of his grandchildren were murdered. And so here's another Arab terrorist that is being demonized, who is just now totally ignored about what's happening there. And the Libya war is now another hidden, silent war, an illegal one. And then now this distraction is being used as an excuse not only to support the Obama administration in the next elections, but now even our own Afghan people are saying, I knew he was in Pakistan, I knew it, let's go take this to Pakistan where it should have been. And the Pakistani people, who majority of them are poor, in a government who is spending more on nuclear weapons than on their own people, who have already been victims of U.S. drones, are now under threat of even more drones, and taking this war in Afghanistan, extending it to Pakistan, which already has been extended, except in a very hidden way. But now it's going to be an official one, exactly. I think. So
a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
So we were being distracted from so many things. We can't now prove this because we're all being labeled as believing in a conspiracy theory, and the body is floating somewhere in the sea, supposedly. So. Everything is against us.
I'm sure he's floating. He's floating with his head toward the east right about now, according to Muslim custom.
Yeah.
Mike in California would like to ask: do the guests hope that since the USA has now declared Osama bin Laden dead, that there will be a process of withdrawal, not escalation of the war in Afghanistan? And if so, can they comment on the American fears of retaliation by bin Laden supporters in Afghanistan, if there are any?
See, I doubt they're going to withdraw. They have Canada, the U.S., and NATO countries have too much interest in Afghanistan. They've got, well, first of all, they've got the oil pipeline, they've got the untapped mineral sources, and like I said, they have been repackaging this war. I mean, it stopped being about bin Laden a long time ago. I don't think they're going to pull the troops out now just because they supposedly found him and killed him. And as for retaliation, I don't know. That's hard to say because, again, Al-Qaeda, I mean, Al-Qaeda is a whole other topic. I mean, there's just so many questions surrounding them, like how they were created, when they were created, who supported them, and as for, I mean, in Afghanistan at least, there's been reports that there's less than 60 Al-Qaeda fighters left in Afghanistan. So really, why are they even in Afghanistan now? It's not being about bin Laden, and there's less than 60 Al-Qaeda fighters in the country. Why are they even there?
Well, I recall a time in the beginning of the war, just probably 3 months before we entered into Iraq and Afghanistan, one of the commentators on television, who was a retired general from the military, said that there were 13,000 known Al-Qaeda operatives in the region. And I said, well, gee, why didn't you pick them up while you were counting them?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I love that, the reasoning behind that. But this, you know, I agree with a lot of what you ladies are saying. It's just amazing. But we do have another question, and I think this is something that you've come here to discuss. And Sam from New York City would like to know, what is the specific work of Afghans for Peace? Who would like to take that one?
Well, I guess we both can. But we started in December 2009. It was right after Obama announced sending 30,000 more troops to the country. And myself and a few other Afghan activists on Facebook who knew each other, we said, oh my God, this has gone on for too long. I mean, too many people have died. There's just been the corruption the corruption has grown in Afghanistan, and the Taliban have been reemerging, and this needs to stop. It's too much. This is enough. We've had enough. We need to do something about it. So we got together and we decided, how about we start an Afghan-led movement against the war? So we originally were called Afghans Against the War. And then we decided, you know what? What about when the troops do eventually leave? What are we going to do then? And so we wanted to continue our work, and so not just against the war and the occupation, but we actually want to see peace and prosperity in Afghanistan. We want to promote education and human rights and women's rights and development and reconstruction and all those things. So right now, I mean, we have 8 points on our mission statement, which is on our website. I'll read them to you now. So our main points is no to war and occupation, no to violence and extremism, no to Islamophobia and racism, yes to restorative justice, yes to reparations, yes to just and humane governance, yes to sustainable development, yes to sovereignty of Afghanistan. So that's what we stand for. And what we can do right now is basically just try to create awareness, not just in the Afghan community around the globe, but in the international community, and let them know what's really going on with the Afghanistan war. I mean, who's really benefiting off of it, and who's being affected by this war? And it's really affecting everyone, not just the poor Afghans inside the country, but the citizens of these NATO-led countries. I mean,
may I ask you?
Thing we want to do is mobilize the Afghan community. We really want to get them to speak out more because, I mean, it's been 10 years. It's time we come together and unite and in a unified voice and solidarity against this occupation and war. So, and luckily for us, we've been slowly achieving that. We had demonstrations in April 9th. I think you may have heard of it. We had the April 9th demonstrations in Toronto and California. So for the first time in 10 years since the NATO-led war and occupation of Afghanistan, we had a rally organized by both a Canadian and Afghan-led peace movement. So we came together to protest against the war in Afghanistan. So for the first time in 10 years in Toronto, an Afghan-led movement organized with a Canadian movement, the Canadian Peace Alliance, the Toronto Coalition Stop the War, and Afghans for Peace. We organized a rally against the Afghanistan war. And we had people from the Afghan community come out. So, I mean, that was a huge accomplishment for us. And it was, I mean, it was like a, it was a historical moment for us because that had never happened before. So, it takes time, but we're getting there. We want to really try to get more Afghans to come out. And
you know, for the most part, I understand the majority of this, but there, yes to restorative justice. I mean, for me, that means one thing. Can you tell me what it means to Afghans for Peace?
Well, restorative justice, I mean, there's different explanation. A lot of our members in the U.S. actually had really focused on this. So because, I mean, a lot of things have happened in Afghanistan, not just from the occupiers, but, you know, with warlords as well. Sorry, I just got a phone call. So, yeah, so we want to restorative justice. Again, you'd have to ask, I wish I had our U.S. members here because they're the ones who had really had made that a focus for them. So Fatima Mojadidi, I believe she was on your show last time. She had been talking about it. But restorative justice, not just from the people who are occupying the country now, from the military, but also from the NGOs that are there and from the warlords and the government and the corrupt politicians. And to basically have, just to help pretty much promote the Afghan voice inside of Afghanistan to get the, basically, well, the justice that they deserve.
So the Afghan people.
What's going on with women's rights in Afghanistan right now?
Well, recently there was a report on Mother's Day released that Norway is the best place to be a mother in terms of health, and Afghanistan came last. It came last out of over 100 countries. So women's rights are very close to the health of a woman. And if her health is not well, how is she going to go after her education? How is she going to go after her social needs if her health is not even respected? So it's totally deteriorating, and it's been, I think, shown on the media as if it's been improving, but it's Afghanistan is now at the bottom of the list, and we've been supposedly getting so much funding and aid, but obviously it's not going to the right people. It has gone so worse that we're at the bottom of the list now. Even where we even passed Democratic Republic of Congo, which is in the most humanitarian crisis right now, and since I think in the last decade, 6 million Congolese people died. So. Mm-hmm. The fact that mothers in Afghanistan are doing worse than a situation like that, I can't even imagine how we can say women's rights are improving when their health is at the bottom of every single country. I think it was 160 countries listed.
Can you tell me, ladies, what your thoughts are on the Taliban resurging as the ruling government, for the most part, for the majority of, at first the Taliban were the bad guys, and now they're the good guys, and now they're the government. So how do you explain that, and what are your thoughts on that?
What do you mean they're the government?
Well, they have reestablished themselves in a lot of governmental agencies there.
Well, for me, I think in Arabic, Taliban means student.
Yeah.
So I just want to try to distinguish the Taliban ideology, which is what most people know of when they took over Afghanistan after the Civil War. And that's the ideology most Afghan people would not want. The one that legitimized women to be at home, not working, not going to school, not even being allowed to leave their house by themselves without some male accompanying them. That Taliban ideology, I don't think any human being would want to live under something like that. So if we're talking about negotiating with an ideology like that, I think that would only bring the situation continuously backwards. to the 90s, which a lot of people celebrated the Taliban being supposedly pushed out, which now they just have been building more strength because of now more Afghans are being terrorized by NATO soldiers, the recent kill team. So out of hunger, out of poverty, out of fear, some are joining the armed resistance. So I think those people are being now labeled as Taliban, and anybody who's opposing NATO is being labeled as the Taliban, as in the Taliban ideology, those terrorists. But some of these resistors are just ordinary Afghan men who now see this as an occupation. And I don't think we should label them as Taliban, or I think we should try to distinguish what that is and what that means, because it's only delegitimizing the resistance and making yet again Afghans seem like some fanatics who are just trying to impose inhumane laws against people. Some just want to live humane lives, and the only way they know how is resisting. And so I think it's called the armed opposition groups rather than the Taliban. And I think the Taliban is being lumped into that group. And so it's become like a whole criminalization of any type of resistance in Afghanistan.
I think that's the what I find interesting. You know, we have these little catchwords that come up, and they're being used to unify different peoples that come from different histories and different backgrounds. And I think that's I think that causes a lot of damage in the end. It takes away the self-identification of a people that's trying to achieve self-determination. But self-determination yes. would mean that you have to be able to determine according to your beliefs, according to your heritage, your religious denominations and affiliations, and all of these things combined make a group of people. I, as a Palestinian, identify with some parts of the Afghan culture, but there are a lot of parts that are very foreign to me. And I'm sure that you guys feel the same thing about other parts of the Middle East. Afghanistan, like even Arab. But because people are Muslim, they just and their dress codes are similar, they tend to clump everything together into this this unilateral identification of a strange foreign country, mm-hmm. and it's craziness. It is totally ridiculous. But I think though that we have to blame some part of it on the melting pot image that people have of America. That mm-hmm. you know that eventually everybody tends to assimilate into a more homogenous kind of human being. But that's mm-hmm. not true in the Middle East. We are clearly self-identified as Palestinians. The Afghans are clearly self-identified as Afghanis, or Afghans. I'm sorry, I say Afghanis, and I know it's Afghans. Just as Iraqis don't even consider themselves to be Arab, some of them. So there's this clumping together of people, and I think that's extremely detrimental to our societies, and I think it's extremely cohesive when it comes to perpetrating atrocity on a people, because once you lump people into this evil incarnate Muslim or Islamist type of person, well, then they're easy to kill because, after all, they're evil, and to kill evil is good. And you get this convoluted image of what is going on back there, and that's very sad. Can I ask you, Laila, since you have done some work with the different organizations, Afghanistan, Palestine, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, can you tell me what the similarities are in there and where the differences lie?
Okay, well, basically the Democratic Republic of Congo, Patrice Lumumba, I think it was in 1968, he was assassinated by the United States CIA and along with the Belgium's government. They both coordinated to have him assassinated by Congolese. He was then replaced by a appointed, like Hamid Karzai, by a appointed, and I'm sure the Palestinian authorities, some Palestinians believe they are also appointed, serving
were.
basically serving Western interests. And after Lumumba, he, the person who they replaced him with, I think his name was Mobutu, he was there for over three decades, I think almost three decades. So it's, and now we see Hamid Karzai is there almost 10 years, even though he is known for being corrupt. He, in the elections, he's known as being involved in rigged and illegal elections practices. And people were complaining, why is the UN allowing him to run? Hello? Stern.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of
Hello, everybody. Sorry about that. This is the People Speak with your host, Basma Farhat. And our guests, Suraya Sahar and Laila Masri, from the Afghans for Peace. Laila was just talking to us about the differences and the similarities between the Afghan Palestine and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And yes, you did ask if some Palestinians thought that the Palestinian Authority was an appointed entity. It was indeed appointed for the protection of Israel and funded and given weapons by Israel to protect Israel after Oslo. So, yeah, this was not about the protection of the Palestinian people. So I agree with you. And one of the things that I'd like to say quickly is that, you know, here we have illegally invaded Libya. We are destroying their infrastructure, destroying their military. And, you know, we're doing it because, you know, of course, we have to take care of the people. It's a shame we didn't feel that the people of the Congo or Sudan or Rwanda or the Palestinians that have been begging for decade upon decade upon decade for aid and assistance against the illegal occupation of their country. And now the Afghans are standing up and crying out that same cry. Do you think that we will ever see justice for our nations?
I think the more informed we are about the root of the problem, and the less gullible we are, and the more we question the sources of our information, I think that's a step. I think empowering ourselves, defending ourselves from propaganda is a step. And until we empower each other, mobilize each other, and unite. Being divided doesn't help. So the Afghan people, the Congolese people, the Palestinian people, the more we see this as our struggle. Each struggle is very different, but very similar. All the three occupations are imperialist interests, Western imperialist interests that are being served in the end, and very racist interests. White supremacy is very fundamental to what is going on in these third world countries, which in my mind, I find it as this is the third world of the first world. This is their third world where they can loot us, they can exploit us, they can bomb us, and they can continue to dehumanize us. So we need to see this as a struggle, a human rights problem, not just a Congolese problem or a Palestinian problem, an Afghan problem, but a human rights problem. And one that in a broader way, that this is imperialism that is going on. This isn't anything isolated from each other. All the problems are connected in a way, because in the end, it's serving the first world. It's not serving the third world. It's serving the local elites.
They no longer call them the third world. They call them developing nations. And the reason is because that's exactly what they're doing. They're turning them into something that they were not before. They're developing them according to some nefarious plan that seems to be suited to the needs of Western powers, but destroys the dignity and the self-preservation and self-determination of the people of the land, which is, totally unacceptable. Ladies, Afghans for Peace, www.afghansforpeace.org. That's the website, folks, if you want to learn more about these ladies. Are you guys planning on anything new? Is there anything in the works that's coming up soon?
Well, in Toronto, I mean, we have the our so-called Independence Day coming up I think it's August. So we're going to hold a big rally then. And also on the 10th anniversary of the NATO-led occupation war, which is going to be in October. So we're going to hold a big rally then as well. And until then, there's probably going to be smaller events, smaller rallies coming up here and there. We just had the No One Is Illegal May Day contingent. We had Afghans for Peace had a presence there, and we're going to have another speaking event with one of our members, spoke Maya Aksir, and Mike Skinner. He had just returned from Afghanistan. So both of them actually had been to Afghanistan recently in the last few months. So we're going to have them on the panel speaking at an event and just pretty much educating people about the grand realities in Afghanistan. And Mike Skinner had said, you know, he was just there. He said there's a protest every single week in Kabul against the NATO presence in Afghanistan, and the media is just not talking about it.
And we
go ahead.
Yeah. And we also have written articles that, surprisingly, they've gotten a lot of support. One article was published over 30 times on different online magazines and newspapers. So I think our next article we are planning to write on the Obama dumped Osama hoax. So, and then another article, we're going to be talking about the Taliban atrocities, because I think the Afghan community is quite divided, and some are having amnesia about what the Taliban did. So we need to remind people that this is not the ideology that respects human beings, and not to consider them as a symbol of resistance or anti-imperialism. In Islam, no civilian is ever justified as being attacked. Every human life is important. So any ideology that does not respect civilian life, and we've seen the Taliban attack civilians, and then say, "Oh, it was something that we didn't want to do," you know. So we're gonna remind people of what that ideology is, represents, and who actually armed and radicalized Afghan men and Pakistani men, because there's a history behind who armed them, who radicalized them, who wrote them radical Islamic books, and then gave it to young Afghan school children. So there's a lot of things that we realize that needs to be reported, because our community needs to be informed, as well informed as possible, especially our younger generation, because our public schools are not meeting quality education for the world that we live in today, when the media is feeding them so much propaganda.
And also who's fighting the resistance now, because the media automatically labels them Taliban. A lot of time it's just guerrilla fighters too.
one. Well, ladies, the time has come. I truly appreciate your being with us tonight. Soraya Sahar, Laila Masri, www.afghansforpeace.org. Please go to the website to find out more. And I wish you guys all the luck in the world. Our guest next week is Susan Lindauer, former CIA asset and author of Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 and Iraq. And it'll all be here at the People Speak Radio Room next week, Tuesday night at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, folks. Thank you very much, ladies. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you,
Good luck.
Thank you so
much. And more power to self-determination and to the freedom from occupation for all of our countries. Thank you very much, everybody. You have a great evening.
Thank you for having us.
And let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is mine.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, here on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Hey, this is Margo Raimundo, and you're listening to my CD, My Heart's Desire. Tune into higher frequencies, only on BBS Radio.